When I was in high school, I was fortunate enough to take an elective English class entitled The Bible as Literature. It is a class that probably could not be taught now in our public schools. It either would not fit in with the Common Core curriculum, or perhaps in other states would not be considered religious enough. It was taught by my favorite English teacher, Mr. Reeves, and you have a whole lot to thank him for. If I have any talent for writing, it is because of him. I entered his classes not really being able to write a coherent sentence, and left his classes being able to at least minimally write interesting sentences. But I digress about the class. The point of that class was what we in America call the Bible, the Hebrew and Christian scriptures, are full of stories and thinking that have impacted our larger culture and literature. And not knowing the Bible may mean that you miss out on some of literature's best metaphors and allusions. Story is so important to who we are as people. Stories help define us. I grew up in a family full of stories about my ancestors who had done some interesting and amazing things. But you know, the ancestors who were not so interesting or amazing, no stories were told of them. They faded into a bit of non-existence. Each of us does this. Think about those times that you have gathered with your family, either the one who raised you or the one that you have chosen. What are the stories you tell? How do they shape your understanding of that family or of you? This month we will focus on the theme of creation, and so I start this month considering the Judeo-Christian story of the creation. Some folks struggle with this story. The creation of the world in 7 days, it does not make sense. Science and astrophysics are making some amazing discoveries as of late. Scientists have recently been able to directly confirm that there are gravitational waves. That is science, but maybe because I am not a scientist, it is more than simply fact or reason. It fills me with awe. Gravitational waves are a distortion of the space-time continuum. I love saying space-time continuum. It makes me sound smart. I have no idea. I can't even imagine space-time continuum. Although, as I understand it, and to those of you who understand it better, I would love to talk to you more about this later. The space-time continuum is like an infinitely large trampoline, and any physical object like our Earth distorts that trampoline. Imagine a bowling ball dropped on a regular trampoline. The space-time continuum actually bends toward the object, and so gravitational waves exist. I'm not sure what that all means, but at least one thing is we cannot see the space-time continuum, or at least I cannot. We cannot hear it or taste it, but we feel it and we experience it. When you trip and fall and bruise your knee, it is precisely because you have experienced the bending of the space-time continuum. I'm not sure that would soften the blow to one of my children who has a scraped knee, but it is still true. And somehow I could contemplate this for a very long time. When confronted with scientific theories and knowledge like gravitational waves and dark matter, I can both feel like I understand something and feel an amazing awe at the wonder that is the creation of this universe that is also beyond my understanding. Try to imagine living a very long time ago, before Western science as we know it, before we harnessed electricity, before any of the kind of the scientific knowledge that we have today. Imagine sitting around a fire at night, looking up at the vast, vast stars, so plentiful that you cannot count. Would that not have been your first experience of the infinite? Would that not have left you in awe? And imagine that someone asks, probably a child, because they always seem to have the most courage for these questions, "Where did the stars come from?" And there would have been a long, quiet pause as each around that fire considered that question, because how do you explain the beauty of the night sky? How to take that awe and wonder and put it into words? Who would have the audacity to confine the infinite? And yet, someone did, because there are always storytellers among us, mythmakers. Those who know that there is a truth too large for history to hold. And someone around that fire, probably one of the elders who had seen it all, the ebb and flow of the seasons, the cycle of life, who knew that there was more to this world than our words can really say, one of them probably started in the beginning. Over the eons, a story of creation evolved, and eventually we have the story of creation as found in the book of Genesis in the Hebrew scriptures. Except that we don't have one story of creation, we have two stories of creation. Many people don't realize it, but there are two different and somewhat contradictory stories of creation in Genesis. The first runs from Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, through Genesis chapter 2, verse 3. And the second story picks up from there. In the first story, creation takes 6 days, and man and woman are created last after all the plants and animals are created. This is the story where the God of the Hebrews looks out on creation on the seventh day and declares all creation good, and takes a rest, trusting Earth's care and stewardship to us humans. In the second story, creation takes what seems like one day. Man is created first, then all the plants and animals are created, and finally woman is created. This is the story that includes the Garden of Eden, the snake, and the tree of knowledge. We tend to conflate the two stories and sort of blend them together in our memory. But it is interesting to note that in the first story, as God finishes each stage of creation, God declares it good. And so when people are created in the image of God, God declares them good also. The second creation story has much more of a hierarchical tone to it, and woman is created from man as a helpmate. And this is the story that sets up the Garden of Eden with the tree of knowledge of good and evil. My personal preference, as you can probably guess, is for myth number one. But they each have their purpose. Each is trying to understand big questions. In the first one, the question is, how did all this get to be, and how is it interconnected? How is the spirit of the sacred infused in this world? And the answer is that the world as we know it is sacred and good and has been at each stage of its development. The second story, I think, is trying to answer the question of how can there be evil in this world? If the sacred is good and the creation is good, how can there be evil and suffering? And the answer is that the evil is not directly created by the sacred, but rather created by humans. Science and religion have often set themselves up against each other. As scientific knowledge has emerged, it has shaped how we humans see this world, and much of the time religion did not accept that well. Galileo was condemned by the Catholic Church. Darwin and his theory of evolution started a storm of theological controversy that America has not yet fully come to terms with. Some traditional Christians would claim that these creation stories in Genesis are a scientific explanation of creation, but I would disagree and say that it's both bad science and bad theology. I have to give credit here to my Roman Catholic upbringing. As some of you may remember, I was raised in a rather liberal Catholic diocese, so I recognize this is not everybody's experience. But when I was taught evolution, it was taught in a way that allowed evolution to be valid and to make sense within Catholic theology. What I learned about evolution is this, that it is real, and it is the way the world is, and that Catholics believe in an infinite God. And since God is infinite, then God can be involved in all aspects of the world. God is everywhere at all times, and that means God is in evolution. God did not have to personally create each and every being that came into the world to be God. God simply had to be infused throughout creation. I no longer hold to that Roman Catholic faith, but that kind of teaching about evolution allowed me as a child to experience the awe in the face of creation, and for that I was blessed. And it allows me as a Unitarian Universalist to fully affirm our seventh principle, affirming the interdependent web of all existence. This argument about evolution and creation and theology lives on in our culture because it has impact on other questions like what is our purpose and what is our meaning and why are we here? Some would argue that believing in a scientific explanation of the beginnings of the universe makes the divine smaller and limited. But I would posit the opposite. Good scientific theory and knowledge opens us up to an awe that can leave me, at least, speechless. In 1900, Reverend Dr. Marion Shutter, a Universalist minister, presented 12 lectures titled Applied Evolution. Don't worry, I will not quote all 12 of them. But in there he wrote, "Suppose one starts out with the belief in God as the power before all things and back of all things. Must that person surrender the belief where he stands in the presence of the revelations of modern science? On the contrary, as one's conception of the universe enlarges, his ideas of God must be expanded also." To paraphrase Shutter here, we have not lost the sacred, we are just beginning to find it. The sacred is greater than we knew, nearer than we realized, better and wiser than we dreamed. We have not lost the sacred, we have only lost an old idea, a way of doing things. The sacred is inside nature and not outside of it. And when we consider that humans themselves are part of nature, we must find the sacred in all of nature and in humans as well. And so my Unitarian Universalist faith and my Roman Catholic upbringing have an unexpected moment of overlap. The biblical story of creation puts human beings at the center of creation, but I don't really believe that anymore. As nice as it would be to hold to that kind of status, our seventh principle teaches us that all parts of this creation are important. One is not more important than the other. The awe and the wonder is not in our primacy as a creation. The awe and wonder are in the universe itself, and it is science that is telling us about that awe and wonder. Consider, the matter in your body is the same age as the universe, because matter cannot be created or destroyed. Your shadow is a confirmation that light has traveled nearly 93 million miles unobstructed, only to be deprived of reaching the ground in the final few feet by you. It takes a whole ocean and the moon to erase your mere footsteps in the sand. Or, not all starlight is the same age. Some of it is millions, even billions of years apart, even though it reaches your eye at the same time. So the night sky isn't a single moment in the universe, but rather a patchwork of billions of years in breath. This creation is an awe-inspiring thing, and yet it is a daily, well-known awe-inspiring thing. More often than not, we take it for granted and grumble and grouse, and the moments when we notice the sacred might be few and far between, but all of it is amazing. I will admit that when I woke up this morning, I did not stand in reverent awe of the snow outside. I cursed it. A curious response, for if Central New York has taught me anything, it is that the weather is what it is. Our grumblings, our prayers, and our praise will not change it. I may more easily feel awe on a clear, starry night when I look up at the sky, but the curious molecular structure of H2O that allows us to have steam and water and ice all on the same planet, and sometimes in the same place and time, is also awe-inspiring. Perhaps next winter I will try snow shoveling as a spiritual practice. I struggled as I prepared this sermon about whether I should retell the story from the book of Genesis. In the end, I opted not to, and hope that you all have had enough of this story in your memory for this sermon to make sense. My focus here has been on the truth of the myth and not the words of the myth, and so I opted not to read it. A truth of that myth is that the creation, our earth, the animals and plants, us, the galaxy, and the universe all around us are a wonder. Looking up at the sky at night, I can still feel magic. Not the magic that supersedes science, not the magic that sits in between the gaps of science, but the magic that I and you, us, we are both an infinitesimally small event in the course of history of this universe, and each of us is made of stardust. That truth and wonder leaves me speechless. In a world without end, may this be so.